a legend of one man who persuaded his friends to watch every Godzilla movie ever made. This world is on the brink of destruction. We need you now, Godzilla Evangelists!
Godzilla Evangelists, a Geek Stew Network podcast, produced and hosted by Ryan Sargent, featuring Sam Schlenker and Joanna Brodecki.
Is the phone ringing?
Hello, Matthew Broderick here.
Hey Matthew, it's Sam from the Trinet.
Nope. TriStar.
Trinet, oh, wow. The HR company.
Gee, what's that?
Funny you should ask.
It's a production company under the Sony Pictures Entertainment label.
Oh,
this
wow,
is my
boy.
Assistant who knows more than me.
Hollywood.
Matthew, I'm calling because I'm told you may be interested in joining the cast of our newest film, Taco Bell Presents Godzilla, or parentheses, something like Godzilla.
Oh, wow, boy. I was hoping for a Marvel movie, but this sounds like it could be pretty big. Would you say so?
It's a really sexy role, Matthew. You get to play a worm doctor who wears a really absurd hat.
You know, Sarah has been wanting me to get into the kind of science type of roles in the bedroom, so we'll see how that might play out on my end of my marriage.
And you know what? We could even cast a love interest opposite you that looks like a knockoff of Carrie Bradshaw.
Wowee. Well, I'm sold. Can I get a little singing in there? I'm trying to get some Broadway parts. I gotta, you know.
Do you have any songs in mind?
Any old 1940s musical particularly. I got my Walkman set to go, so if we could make that happen.
It sounds like we got to write a song from American in Paris into this film.
Perfect. Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks. When do we shoot?
Perfect.
All right.
Meet you in Chernobyl.
Meet you there.
Meet you in Chernobyl.
Meet you in Chernobyl.
Right. You know what? Fuck it. We're making an entirely different movie. Taco Bell Presents Meet Me in Chernobyl.
Great.
He would do that, too.
You know, and that's how Godzilla was born.
Wow. Guys, this is such a great intro to a great podcast about a great movie.
I agree. Specifically, especially about that great movie section.
Oh, my God. It's so remarkable. Should we introduce Ryan, our host? I feel like he's the one
who's... I've officially been defeated. Sam and Joanne are recording this with their boots on my neck, ready to crush my windpipe.
I was like, what does that mean?
Also here with us, I'm sure you heard her, is my friend Mackenzie Marlowe.
Hello. Very happy to be here.
Yes, she is actually on the Sony payroll, so she has a distant connection to this disaster.
I am. They pay my bills.
She's also Sam's girlfriend.
Woo! Whee! Oh, why am I the only one cheering? Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yes.
I am the only one cheering in life.
I'm cheering on the inside. You just can't tell it because my spirit is broken. I'll go into the background a little bit before we talk about Godzilla 98. So
there's so much stank in your voice, even when you say the name of the movie.
Just smile, you know? Just pretend.
Godzilla 98.
I can't help it. This is infamously hated by fans, although to a certain extent that's changing, because there's a lot of kids who grew up watching this, and now they're loud adults. Mm. But for so long, there was a commonality, like a bonding among all Godzilla fans, that we could agree that this one was an unspoken abomination. So there's even like a fan name for the monster in this movie. We call her Gino, which stands for Godzilla in name only.
Okay, now you said in the movie, it's specifically pregnant man.
Yes.
See, it's lizard. It's very confusing.
I have a lot of comments about that that I'll save for later.
Of all the crude names they could come up with, that's very polite. That's a very polite name. They're like, yeah, Godzilla in name only. Yeah, fuck that.
Well,
guy. Yeah, got him. Gino, a perfectly normal Italian name. Take that.
What can I say, Godzilla fans? I want to take the high road, right?
Yeah, he's just a fishmonger living in Manhattan.
Oh, why are they all so mean to me because of my name? And my muscular thighs.
Gino. So muscular.
Gino.
Yeah, Gino's ripped.
Yeah.
Toned as fuck.
Well, let me get into the synopsis. So, as usual, jump in with the sound effects.
Yep. So
you're welcome to as well, Mac.
Mac, the way this works is he tells the brief synopsis of the movie, and then we add sound effects to back him up like our old-timey radio
drama. Incredible.
Who was our guest last time? What was his name again?
Marcus.
He really ran with those sound effects.
Oh, he did. Yeah. He was like, we couldn't compete.
He really stepped up. Also, I feel like last time I struggled to tell the story of the movie because it was difficult to tell if anything happening was relevant. But this time nothing was relevant, so I just...
I disagree already.
Or everything.
Everything
is.
Was equally relevant.
All right, so here we go with the synopsis. In 1998, a mysterious series of attacks on fishing ships begins. Radiation specialist / biologist Nick Totopoulos is abruptly transferred from his study of Chernobyl earthworms to help study the attack.
That's the helicopter.
I thought that was the worms.
Oh.
Strange.
There are the worms. We found them.
We're giving it 100%.
There aren't any good sounds in this movies. In this movie.
Singing there aren't, like, in the rain.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah.
There you go.
Nick realizes that the attacker is a giant lizard mutated by radiation, which suddenly attacks New York City. As the military tries and fails to kill the monster, Godzilla.
This is all of those explosions are things hitting not Godzilla.
A lot of fish. A lot of fish.
A lot of fish.
They're worse shots than the soldiers in Rodan.
Fish slap sound.
They are worse shots than, yes.
As the military tries and fails to kill the monster, Godzilla, Nick discovers it is pregnant. After accidentally leaking information to his ex-girlfriend Audrey, Nick is booted off the project.
Do, do, do. That's a news soundtrack.
Thank you.
And all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put New York City, the Big Apple, back together.
Couldn't come up with a worse slogan.
That's a good approximate rhyme.
Thank you.
Oh, man. However, Jean-Philippe, an undercover French agent,
forgot about that guy.
How can you forget about him?
I have a helicopter. Okay, it's passed.
Okay, this is the most interrupted synopsis ever. Jean-Philippe recruits the biologist to join a hunting party to hunt down Godzilla's eggs and hide the French origins of the monster. While the military apparently kills Godzilla in the Hudson River, Nick, Jean-Philippe, and a repentant Audrey hunt for the eggs. They find them in Madison Square Garden, where they hatch. Narrowly escaping the babies, our heroes work together to send a message to the military. They bomb the arena mere seconds after Nick and friends escape. Godzilla is revealed to still be alive.
Oh no! Oh, shit.
And it chases our heroes until finally being trapped in the Brooklyn Bridge and killed. Everyone still alive gets a happy ending, except poor Mayor Ebert.
Great.
That was a great synopsis.
Great synopsis for a great film.
Speaking of
the mayor, I love that he's just stress eating Hershey's Kisses throughout this entire movie.
Which, that's got to be another sponsorship, right?
It's deeply relatable. Yeah.
So the movie opens up, and having watched the 2014 Godzilla a couple weeks ago, the intro is weirdly similar.
Very similar. Yeah. I'm surprised.
Does it also have sick 90s fonts?
No, not as many 90s fonts.
And not as many iguanas.
No, so many iguanas. Like, oh, God.
They played a big part in this film.
So I just right off the bat, I was actually really excited because I had the opportunity last weekend to do one day of work directly for Roland Emmerich. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have so much. I'll have like so much to bring to this podcast. And it didn't end up happening. But I would have, had I have seen this movie, I would have had so many questions for him. He probably wouldn't have answered them or
like,
wanted to.
How are you still working in this business? I'm going to get fired after this.
Yeah, maybe. We all are.
Does Roland Emmerich even have any Hollywood power, though?
Yes, he just sold a big thing at Cannes.
That was what I was going to do.
Is that the director, the writer? Who's this guy?
Man. Yeah, that's director and the writer, unfortunately.
Yeah. And he's also made such hit films as The Day After Tomorrow and 10,000 BC.
But I could watch Day After Tomorrow any day, any time of year.
I'm surprised. I mean, I guess, did you like this one as much? Because this was more of that.
I greatly enjoyed this film.
Oh, yeah, me too. Okay, good.
This is starting to make sense. The best Jurassic Park movie I've ever seen.
You hit the nail on the fucking head. We're going to come back around to that. So after the intro, the movie starts pelting us with stereotypes left and right.
Yes. Yes, it does. Everyone is a stereotype in this movie. We open on a Japanese boat. How do we know it's Japanese? Well, for one, they're pouring fish everywhere. And for two, there is a man eating noodles while watching sumo wrestling.
In the middle of the ocean, in the 90s, during a storm, he is getting his service for watching the sumo wrestling. I was impressed by this.
And then we get introduced to our protagonist, Nick Tatopoulos.
I counted, guys. I think I got 8 times that they made that joke in the film.
That made that hilarious, very fun and cool joke.
It's really fun to make fun of that name that they gave him.
The name that they gave him that was ripped from the designer of the creature of Godzilla in this movie.
Yes.
The guy who came up with the concept of this new and improved Godzilla is Patrick Tatopoulos.
In case there was any doubt as to whether Matthew Broderick is in fact American, we open on him singing in the rain. Well, it's daytime, but he's singing in the rain.
It can rain during the day.
And
well, yeah, good point. All right, it's clear out. I forgot that rain doesn't only happen at night.
And he has a Walkman. He has a CD of Singing in the Rain that he is listening to. Like, it being in the car is one thing, but him getting out of the car and still listening to it, that's another level of commitment on Matthew Broderick's part. But yes. I do believe it. He's always on Broadway. That's probably his dream role.
It was probably a Sony Walkman.
Good point. Are there product placements in this film?
There might be a couple. There might be a couple product placements. I was wondering, I was about to ask, why the fuck is he wearing headphones while he's driving? But now I get it. It's a Sony ad. It's dangerous. He's going to kill somebody else.
Yeah.
It seemed pretty desolate out there. Him and the worms.
Yeah, just worms.
Yep.
Did he just make a reference to Matthew Broderick killing somebody else while driving?
Yeah, oof. I did.
Too soon.
Dark.
But correct.
Anyway, yeah, he's got headphones on. He's wearing a terrible 90s Kangol hat.
He's got photos of his ex from 4 or 5 years ago.
5 years okay.
ago it is gone.
I have so many comments about that. Yeah. What a creep. 1, 2, what a creep. 3, get over it. You're a creep.
Get the fuck over it. Yes.
Not to skip ahead, but I feel like we need to discuss the central romance of this film, which is legitimately the worst on-screen romance I maybe have ever seen.
What
it's
was that
really
chem
bad.
Test that they ran for the audition? Because it was... It couldn't have been anything.
I don't know, but there are some scenes... Anytime there's a scene between them, it goes into... If the movie wasn't ridiculous enough, it goes into, completely laughable territory. Anytime those two are left alone.
I feel like they wanted to cast Sarah Jessica Parker and couldn't get her, and then just cast someone and dressed her like Carrie Bradshaw, gave her the curly hair, the weird, retro vintage clothes.
Right.
What's weird is every
and
time...
And I wondered. You know she's thinking that as she's walking around.
Yes!
That sounds great. I would.
Was Godzilla really pregnant and I don't even have a boyfriend? Flashing cursor.
Is a man pregnant before I am? Yes. So
will I be alone forever?
The answer is yes if you keep behaving any way you do in this movie.
So he's hanging with the worms.
We're kind of on to the characters, but I have so much more to say about Nick before we move on. I like him more than Ford from last show.
Yes.
I didn't even remember Ford when you said it, because that's how boring. I'm like, Ford, yeah.
Ford Explorer.
Matthew Broderick is at least charming. His character is bizarre and pretty flat, but there's something there.
He tries. He really tries to give it that, you know.
Here's what I'll say, actually, in favor of this movie, compared to the 2014 one, and I mean this like, mm-hmm. I won't defend Matthew Broderick's performance in this because I think he's bizarre.
He's just miscast, like terribly miscast.
Yes,
yeah,
agree.
Yeah, but the thing that this movie has going for it in its favor is that the characters have some influence on the plot regarding Godzilla.
Yeah,
like he's fair. Actually making decisions. Everyone is actually making decisions. Even Hank Azaria is doing things that mean something. And, like, this is not a small thing. Is like, that is an indictment on 2014 something so obvious that this dumbass movie could figure it out just was, like, ignored in 2014. So, come on, guys.
Why did the Frenchman show up there? I have no idea, but he did serve a purpose once he was there.
Yeah.
At least. Like, he had a part to play.
To protect France from having a bad legacy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Finally, no one will be able to say something mean just about the French.
Get a win for France.
Yeah. Oh.
Good old France.
He is the best part of the movie.
He
like,
is.
Let's
Jean
be
Reno's
real.
Great.
Jean Reno is like the saving grace.
Yeah.
He is.
So good.
I mean, he's a great actor, even when he's just in this awful script. Soon after, he meets like the other doctors. And then there's like a weird... two weird running jokes, one of which is that, like, oh yeah, you're the worm guy. And then second, why is every woman, like, super attracted to him?
They're so hot for Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. Is it that hat he doesn't take
that
off?
That redhead was all over him. Oh. She could not stop oogling him.
Yes.
She was like, also, I think you're pretty cute. They're, like, driving in some van through some dinosaur footprint.
Yes, it's so hammy because she's not looking at him at first. She's like, ugh, what peon have they brought to interrupt my important work? And then she goes, get out of here. Oh, look at you.
Yeah, she does do the biggest, like, say.
Come over here, hot worm guy.
Like, he hasn't told any jokes. He's proven himself in no way that she's...
Slide that worm research my way.
And yeah, we already talked a lot about Audrey, how she's just shockingly pointless. And
oh, she's absolutely inexcusably vapid throughout.
Yeah.
Like, she's horrid.
I love her friends, though, who are very not nice to her, but who are just...
I know, they're such dicks to her.
Reiterations of New York in the 90s.
Yeah. Is that how everyone is in New York, Joanna?
Everyone in New York is like, listen, honey, you don't got it. You better get out of here. You can't make it in the news business. That's how they all talk. Everyone on the street.
I thought immediately when she's talking with her friend, the first thing I got this crazy deja vu of watching Showgirls.
Oh, like, no, yeah.
Like that, like their hair, them talking, like however they were talking. Like I just immediately thought like Showgirls, and like that's not a good comparison to make in your head.
Right.
Of anything.
And that boss.
Oh, great!
Just their whole
Harry Shearer, amazing. Anyway, Ryan, go on.
Yeah, no, Harry Shearer keeps the movie alive until Mayor Ebert and Godzilla show up to carry it the rest of the way. Speaking of which, favorite character right there.
Which
I
one?
Feel like he's Mayor Ebert. I feel like he's the only character. Michael Lerner as Mayor Ebert is the only one who seems to really realize exactly what kind of movies he's in. He's playing it just like exactly right.
I do have to say though, I thoroughly loved Kevin Dunn, who I did not expect to be in this film, throwing out some early lines of Ben Cafferty from Veep. Like, he was throwing some of the shade throughout the room that he's using now in Veep. And I really appreciated that he knew the terrible movie he was in, but that he could be used for something far greater.
Speaking of Ebert, he expressed that he was disappointed that Godzilla didn't squash him like a bug after he saw the movie.
Who, Roger Ebert or
Mayer? Yeah, real Roger Ebert.
Real Roger Ebert. Okay, yeah.
Wrote that.
No, good. Yeah.
And then the last character I kind of have something to say about is I kind of love the fuck-up soldier, O'Neill.
Me too.
He's just like slightly overplaying it.
The one who can't get anything right?
Yeah, but he's so sympathetic. You're like, you want him to succeed.
Right.
I enjoyed the two elderly men towards the beginning of the film. The one who was the only fisherman who survived and the other guy who was fishing on that pier and was like...
I know.
Yes.
He was the most adorable old man. My heart was breaking that we didn't get to see he was okay.
I need to think he made it. Like, I just... I need to think he did. Those were my two favorite characters.
He looked like a strong swimmer. So.
That's true.
Yes, because that was how he died, was drowning, obviously. Obviously, that was the death cause.
Don't tell me. La, 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 la.
And then there's Godzilla, him / herself.
Herself.
Not very Godzilla looking.
This was the first time the impact of watching many Godzilla films has, I feel like, really... made its impact upon me, because seeing Godzilla, I was like, no, that's not right. The second time I saw that,
yeah.
I was like, he needs to be fatter in the thighs. Where are those thick, chunky thighs we love?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, am I becoming the fan?
Yep. This is kind of a slim, thick Godzilla. There's a lot of Godzilla undercarriage as well.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing right. This.
This one runs so fast.
So fast.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to do that.
Well, the takeaway, the quote of the night when we watched it was her roommate Kat watched part of it with us. And the quote I have is actually, it's the moment when Godzilla emerges from the sewer, like right in front of Matthew Broderick. And she wrote, or she said, "Why is he like a skinny man?"
That shot in particular, though, he is, it's like chest to abs, I don't know, to like it's ripped legs.
Weird.
And apparently they wanted to use early like motion capture on this, but then the takeaway was it looked too much like a man in a suit.
Right, which is always a problem in Godzilla, is you really got to avoid it looking exactly like a man in a suit like it does in all of them.
No, nobody would ever watch a movie like that.
No.
But yeah, I actually have a funny, sad story related to this, where the producer who came up with the idea for Godzilla produced every Japanese Godzilla movie except one. He was like very sick at this time, and so this Toho producer like couldn't take the designs to his sick bed, so he had to like come back and tell him about it, and he said, "The monster runs fast and it looks like Carl Lewis," which is just...
Oh man,
I have no idea what he said in response.
Oh my God,
probably just shed a tear. And also apparently the designer gave Godzilla the chin of Shere Khan from the Jungle Book.
Yeah. I wrote that down too in my preliminary research, because they wanted to give him a strong chin. Oh. Command respect.
Yes, because Shere Khan famously commands respect.
Right. Oh, sorry. I just had a question from early on when Jean Reno is kind of interrogating the man saved from the ship. Why was he waving the fire in front of
French
him?
French magic.
I don't know. That was my first note in the movie, too.
Is this like a hypnotism technique that I'm not aware of, or...
Because it's weird, because it... Godzilla doesn't really breathe fire, which we will come around
except
to.
Except twice later.
Yeah.
It was like French Secret Service shit. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We don't even know.
Can we all just be honest? It's Roland Emmerich thought it was cool.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I wrote down, this is like a David Lynch movie without class or brains. Because it was just that kind of unexplainable symbology. But then I love that they introduce New York with an on-screen title that's just the city that never sleeps.
That. We both yelled, when that happened.
This movie made me so happy that I live in New York.
Oh, man.
I bet that you love all the fun New York jokes.
Also, the day after, my best friend had just asked her boyfriend, like, if a disaster happened in the city, like, all of New York is under attack, what do you do? And he's like, well, the subways would be packed. I couldn't get over the Brooklyn Bridge. I'd jump in and swim my way to Jersey and meet you at the clock tower. It just felt so right. After watching this movie, I'm like, yeah, great. Yes. That's what I'll do.
On the subject of the old man on the pier scene, I feel like we got to give credit where it's due on the, like, three or four good things in this movie. And that scene of the swell of water and him running down the dock and all the boards of the dock firing up in the air, that's good stuff.
That was cool shit.
Like, yeah. I thought that was good.
That's a good scene.
His losing the rod and being like, whoa, I got a big one. Like, that was kind of not so good, but...
I know, the idea that Godzilla wouldn't immediately, like, rip his arms off or just yank him into the ocean was strange, but apart from that, it worked.
This Godzilla was very nice. He gave Matthew Broderick a lot of time. Yes. Non-violent.
Well, I mean, Matthew Broderick's romantic chemistry with Godzilla
is better. More chemistry with Godzilla than the girl, for sure.
Than either of the girls. Well, that's the thing, is that he, these are his options, is these two fucking psychopaths and then Godzilla, who's like kind of misunderstood. Not so bad.
I did think that was weird that, actually, that's another scene I'll give props to. Not after Godzilla comes out, but the scene where he's popping the manhole covers off is kind of visually interesting.
It is.
But then Godzilla comes out and there's like, a scene that does feel romantic because it's just so horribly executed.
There's a lot of prolonged eye contact.
There is. And then Godzilla, he smells Godzilla's breath and he thinks, you smell less like fish than the other options.
I love that they set a fish trap and on the radar screen or whatever it is that they have where they're tracking his movements, there's just a graphic of a fish, like a big old fish.
That comes standard with any military equipment.
Yeah, that's right.
It was like almost a Swedish fish. Dad. Yeah,
yes, exactly. I also
loved how when they're setting the trap, he just turns to somebody and says, that's a lot of fish. And it just popped into my head, like, that's $10,000 that the world's never going to get back was for that shot of Matthew Broderick saying, that's a lot of fish.
Yeah.
I also was curious because he does have the ocean right there, so I didn't know how they could hedge all their bets on this. It was a big pile of fish, but, like, was it an outstandingly large pile of fish? I don't know. Right. I don't know.
I think it was just conveniently located to the property that Godzilla had chosen to move into. It's kind true. Of like having a Trader Joe's down the street from your apartment.
Game changer.
It's my best guess.
No, I think you identify with Godzilla in a way that we never do, so I think
dude, Godzilla's just trying to nest.
Yeah, that's the other weird thing is just in general, did you guys find yourself feeling bad for him?
Yes.
Like, throughout the whole movie?
1000%.
For Godzilla?
Yes!
Yeah, and not in, like, an intentional way like some of the other movies want you to empathize, but, like, in a way where it's like, this movie's like, fuck yeah, we're killing him, and we're like, what?
Yeah, especially at the end where they gun... Or wait, I forgot how they kill him at the end. He gets trapped in the bridge. Yeah. And then they just blow him up? Yeah. It's really sad. And then there's a moment where Matthew Broderick is, like, staring out over the sea like he's lost his lover. And then everyone starts cheering.
Yeah.
It's tonally very confused.
No, when he nuzzled that little baby one, it was so sad. I was like, you guys suck. You guys are jerks. But
that was a little sad. The tonal shifts in this movie are... Nut bar.
Yes.
And we'll get to some of the worst ones near the very end.
So excited.
Oh, yeah.
But it can't decide what it wants you to feel like. But one thing that it does want is for you to know that, hey, this is like another Jurassic Park movie, y'all. It has, like, the inappropriate, like, romantic music over some shots of Godzilla.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason this movie got made, is they wanted... Sweet Jurassic Park.
The Lost World, Tailwind. 1997.
Right. Yeah.
I will say I thought that as well, and I think that the second half of the movie very quickly becomes ripping off Aliens.
It feels very James Cameron inspired.
I see that, but I also see the Raptors. They're the Raptor
animals. Certainly.
To Jurassic.
It's the alien setup with all the eggs, right? And then there's a little bit of like gremlins in there where you go, they're cute. And then it quickly becomes the velociraptors from Jurassic Park. Yeah.
There's a thing throughout too that Roland Emmerich does very often and not subtly. Is there's like flashing blue light in the background of every shot, every location they go, which is that's an Aliens thing. Is I remember the last time I saw Aliens being like, oh yeah, because there's like electrical stuff flickering or something, but like it's outdoors. It's like, is it lightning? But you know, is it just like buildings have all blown all their fuses? And like, but it's like there's no sound. It's just flickering lights everywhere because you know, Roland Emmerich is a subtle man, a man of subtle tastes.
Also, the fact that the subway system just had so much going on down there. Like, there were so many buildings, intricate. Like, I don't think that's how it works underground.
No.
But they were suddenly had all these doors to close, elevators that they could use. They were under the Mets. I'm like, I don't think you guys could just get in there. I don't think that happened.
And there's absolutely no way Godzilla can move around in the subway tunnels like they claim.
No.
Well,
he's way too big.
He was agile.
He's like a basilisk from Harry Potter.
Yeah. Correct, That's like the weirdest part to me is that the central conceit of the first half of this movie is that Godzilla's hiding in plain sight. Like they lost him. That is like, think about how ridiculous that is.
Yeah.
It's finding he's hiding somewhere it is a hide and seek game with a giant radioactive monster. Where is he in New York?
I love that everyone who left New York 24 hours later was like pissed. They were like, let me back in. You lied to me. It's like, you guys, you saw what was happening. And they're like, get me back to my 200 square foot place on Lower East Side. Yeah, it was very good.
But then was it evacuated because that pharmacy was open?
How did she know he would be in that pharmacy?
Scene, holy shit.
We should unpack the pharmacy scene.
Yeah, like,
let's go for it.
That's a scene, again, if you ever want to just take a master class in how not to make a romantic moment, it's that scene of them meeting in the pharmacy. And actually what's funny is that when she walked in and we knew he was buying pregnancy tests and like a whole bunch of them, I was like, oh my God, they're going to undercut this scene. They're going to have a romantic moment and then the pharmacist is going to be like, here are your 200 pregnancy tests, sir. But that doesn't even happen. Even the obvious thing, they do it right at the beginning.
They didn't go for the
low. They only have four. And I love that Matthew Broderick in this movie has such a deep knowledge of the chemical workings of a pregnancy test.
Because he was studying worms.
Right.
Why would he need to know which hormones are involved?
Science is very nebulous and applies to a lot of things in this movie.
He'd be great on Jeopardy. I feel like he would be the perfect candidate for that show.
Well, I think he just is really good at dealing with worm things and sex, because clearly he's very desired. He's got a lot of experience.
Yes.
He's like, yep.
He himself seems very asexual. Like, he's...
I agree, completely.
That's why he identifies so much with...
For me, the sexual interest in the movie is Jean Reno.
What? No croissant?
Him being confused by a donut is actually really funny. I thought that was great.
Well, I counted three moments that were jokes that actually worked. And I feel like we got to point these out because like... There. Again, I said there were five good moments in this movie. Three good jokes, and one of them was him being confused by the coffee. It's not, like, earth-shattering, but it's good. The chewing gum to look more American.
Oh,
pretty well
that was
done.
Great.
Yeah.
That was good.
That reminded me of Some Like It Hot. I had some throwback to old comedy, old Hollywood.
Yeah.
And Jean Reno doing an Elvis impression.
It was good, too.
Yeah, that was great.
That did not work for me. I thought that was embarrassing.
What was the other one?
The other one is where they're like, where did you find this guy? Oh. And Matthew Broderick goes, oh, he's French.
He's French. That, like, guys, you got to take the little things that kind of work and just hold them on a pedestal, because that's all you've got in this movie is those few minor little things that are fine.
I also thought Hank Azaria, for his being super big, actually kind of, he also knew what movie he was in, I felt.
Which character is he?
Animal, the camera guy.
Oh, loved Animal. Yeah, he was great. Yeah. You're right. He exactly knew what he was there for.
Yes.
You're right. I found it hard to like him, though, because of that early scene, where he was such a dick to Audrey, and then, like, went out and was, like, a hero for getting this 2-second blurry video of Godzilla. I was like, fuck you.
That was a cool video, Ryan. He almost got stepped on, okay? Give the man some credit where credit is due. And he didn't die, okay?
Yes. The problem, and I have this problem with him being a dick to her, and also with Harry Shearer, you know, workplace harassing her. He's like, you know, you stay out of the big leagues, honey. But she actually is bad. Like, she's just not good. No. He's like, you don't have any talent. Go do something else.
Yeah, her going after Godzilla, like, unless Animal was there to, like, be like, yeah, this is what the fuck we're going to do, I don't think she would have made it.
She just puts herself in jeopardy, is kind of shitty to Matthew Broderick because she steals stuff from his she steals a confidential tape, which let's be honest, stop labeling things as confidential.
Don't label it
in big red letters.
Yeah, and then leave it in a tent that anyone can walk into at any time.
And she's like, oh man, Animal, I really messed up. That was her biggest Sarah Jessica Parker moment. Like, what did I do to did I do to Aiden? I feel like I that was her.
Yes.
And she's crying in bed.
This cry. So bad.
So sad. And he writes over her tape, and she's so upset, but he actually saved her career because her sign off is so heinous.
We already got that in the recording, right? The All the King's Horses.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's so embarrassing.
Yeah, that's.
And she's like, yes, nailed it. Nailed it.
So as we got about halfway, I started hearing, like, a lot of the outrageous, like, nu metal songs on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which is, like, one of the weirder things that isn't really a thing anymore. But I felt like in the late 90s and early 2000s, execs were like, we gotta have a killer soundtrack for this blockbuster. We gotta make it happen. We gotta get some hot acts in here. Because why would having a soundtrack for this movie be important? And yet, it's clear that they spent a lot of money and effort on it.
I was really hoping that there was going to be, like, a wrap-up of the movie in the credits. I know it's a little after that movement of film, but, like, that sounded like exactly what I wanted. But, yeah, you're right. And there's also, there's one that keeps showing up that is, it samples Kashmir by Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah.
And so, it, like, you hear it, and it's like, you know, the ba-na-num, 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 and you're like, oh, my God, it's Kashmir. That's and then, cool. like, some fucking whiny voice shows up, and you're like, oh, 90s whiny.
The whole movie just reeks of that mid to late 90s super machismo, like, attitude, and just dudes doing dudely stuff, and it is
named Animal.
Really unfortunate.
Well, that's, it's the most American movie. Like, can you name a more American movie than this? Is like, down to everyone being some kind of racial stereotype and us needing to label every place we go as not, you know, like, to make sure that people understand, and then, like, and basically taking this Japanese thing and just, like, make it as American as possible. We're gonna make fun of the French with it. Like, are you kidding?
Right. Well, and like, Ryan, how you brought up with the last one, how you're like, they reference the atomic bomb, they show it at the beginning, that big explosion, and then there's nothing, not a piece at all of, like, hey guys, this is our fault, remember?
Right, they ducked responsibility again. No, it's they're like, no, it was the French. Definitely the French.
I think one of the weirdest things about this one is that they're, to that point, there are seemingly no consequences for anyone doing anything in this movie. And just blowing shit up, and Godzilla just killing up. Does he kill people? I'm not actually sure.
Not intentionally.
Just wrecking, and a lot of the damage caused to New York City is actually because whoever armed forces are trying to shoot at him and just missing really embarrassingly, and then they take down a building.
Yeah.
Well, in Godzilla dodges.
As the Mayor Ebert said, the goddamn Chrysler Building.
So, yeah, seemingly everyone comes out okay after just wreaking havoc and destroying a big creature, and there's no sense of, like, this was our fault, which I think is a good,
right.
good point there. Yeah.
Right. That pissed me off that they ducked responsibility again. And then, like...
They just blame it on the French.
Right.
Yeah. And here's the thing, is I love weirdness in Godzilla movies. And so I want to love the weirdness in this, but it just feels silly because of that machismo that you were just talking about. Like, they want it to be taken seriously on one level.
Right.
And then there's a scene where baby Godzillas are slipping on gumballs and basketballs.
That was down crazy. That same note, Ryan.
That was the best and the worst. It was awful. But it was great. Very fun.
Yeah.
That's the tonal shift of going from the alien setup with all the eggs and you're supposed to feel suspense and how are they going to escape the velociraptors from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they unleash the gumballs and it becomes camp.
I felt like I was watching a Rugrats movie. I was like, this is a Rugrats movie right now. This is yeah, exactly.
Right.
This is what they would do.
And this is more subjective, but as a fan... I like the weirdness in combination with just, like, a touch of gravitas. Like, a little bit of mythology and warmth to the monsters in this. It was like, this is a big animal, big silly animal.
Well, the focus here was Matthew Broderick, whereas I feel like in the films, what's the one where that businessman, he's like, we gotta get him in my newspaper, show this, like, you know, the one with the silly guy?
Right. Yeah, Dr. Taco.
Focus Dr. Taco. Is still kind of more Godzilla. Dr. Taco. Oh, I miss that guy.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, you never realize how much you miss Dr. Taco until you see this.
And you've got Taco Bell.
Yeah. Dr. Tacopolis.
Dr. Tacopolis.
I have another thing I just want to call out, which is born pregnant. When they said, oh my God, they're born pregnant, Mac and I both simultaneously said, born pregnant, the new TLC show. that belongs, actually, to be fair, she said TLC and I said Bravo, and TLC's better. But yeah.
TLC's the thing.
That would be a hilarious show.
Yeah.
Born pregnant.
That would be. Following the baby Godzillas. Speaking of them, I don't know what you would call the opposite of a personal hero, but the French guy who sniffs his fingers after seeing a baby Godzilla is that for me.
Yes. Yes. Correct. We both reacted to that.
I felt ashamed for humanity when I saw that shot.
Yeah, that we both reacted to that because when they... Honestly, when they kept mentioning the smell of fish, I wrote down, oh my God, is someone going to smell their fingers? And the answer is they did. So the movie was as base as what I thought it was going to be.
But yeah, this whole ending is like cuckoo wacky. Like with Matthew Broderick opening the elevator and he's like, oh, wrong floor.
A classic farce. It just became a farce.
I expected
that bit.
Right.
Yeah.
The sound effect from Scooby-Doo when they're trying to run fast and they just run in place for a second.
Yeah. I'm surprised that when he jammed that wire into Godzilla's gums, he wasn't like, time for a root canal or something.
Oh, that would have been great, Ryan. Oh, I wish they had.
But that, again, that would have been too self-aware for this movie. There's a complete lack of awareness that they're doing anything campy in this movie.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They do think it's cool.
They think it's so cool. They think they are the coolest people ever.
Also, he's so good at math, like that point when he was like, that would mean there could be up to 40,000 new ones in 1 year. I was like, how the fuck is he, how does he know how long they're pregnant? How does he know this shit?
Well, he's way off at the beginning. He goes, there could be as many as 12.
Right.
No. And then, oh, I love this. Then they go in and they're like, okay, phew, just three. Thank God. And then... someone's like, oh no, there are more, and they're just right next to them. They're just surrounded by, I don't, they're all clearly visible. They're just surrounded by eggs, and for a moment, did he have, like, temporary blindness?
Yeah, what is that reveal that you see, oh my God, three eggs. Oh, I look just slightly to the left, and there are a bunch of, that's not a reveal, guys.
I know. Matthew Broderick is just like insanely optimistic. Like, at this exact one angle of my view, there's three, so that's all there could possibly be.
He's kind of oddly nonchalant throughout the whole movie. It's weird. Yeah.
Very nonchalant.
Yes.
The stakes are minimal. They're doing a lot, but the stakes are pretty low.
Yes, agree.
Even that French guy, like, I was like, oh, damn. His friends are dying. That's kind of sad. They're sacrificing just their friends. But when they all got out of there.
Smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, and the explosion happened. He made a coffee joke. Like, his first thing he said was just a coffee joke. Not, oh, all my five friends just died.
Yep.
Right.
He's like, they had to go for it, though. It was the perfect time. He probably did want a coffee.
I had forgotten about the taxi chase scene.
Oh, yeah. Wild that was, happened.
It was fun. Completely unbelievable, but fun.
Were there any good action sequences besides the beginning? Because, you know, like, sometimes we're like, the film is bad, but in the 2014 one, like, the action, you know, worked in a lot of parts. Did any, like, for me, the only thing, I liked that eyeball in the subway. I was like, all right. That was the only thing I was mildly amused by.
It wasn't poorly, like, the action stuff wasn't poorly done. It was just so weirdly misjudged. Like, everything was misjudged about it. So it wasn't like, taxi chase was like, yeah, it's a fine action, like, it's fine. It's just, like, so light speed stupid, but it's, like, yeah. Fine. Like, it wasn't ugly or, poorly done.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And you could tell what was going on, which is actually a problem in a lot of movies now, for some reason. Yeah, the taxi chase was the closest that came to working for me, but nothing really worked.
No, especially when they're trapped in Madison Square Garden and they cut down the chandelier light things to make a pathway, and then basically the baby Zillas just wait for them to get out.
Wait for them to be out.
It was my takeaway.
Oh my god, I was like, that guy, man, he really knew his shit. He has been well trained to be that fast, knowing how that would work and that it would be effective for them.
Right. And I guess it distracted them because of the light.
They're
exploding.
Scared of fire. I don't know.
Yeah,
because
maybe.
He's supposed to be the disposable camera too.
That when, cuz they kind of set that up early. I don't remember when, but I remember there's a moment where a flash of light happens and Godzilla is kind of like slightly perturbed, and then
I think that is the disposable camera moment.
Was it the at the beginning?
Yeah, because I was, like, puzzled as to why Matthew Broderick was just like, oh, I'm taking pictures of New York, and then that happened.
Yeah, and then that was the setup, I guess, to Godzilla. That's how they get out at the end of the tunnel or whatever, is they flash their high beams, which I identify with because people do that at night in L.A., and they drive behind you with their, like, brights on, and you're like, I am a blind Godzilla right now.
Right. With those, like, super-powered LED lights on,
those are the
new cars.
The worst, yes. Yeah. The middle was just a lot of repetitious shooting at Godzilla that didn't work.
Classic. A classic trope.
But it's good to know that he can be shot to death, though. Like, they do just hit him with missiles eventually.
I know. He's literally just, like, cartoonishly, like, ducking them or, like, turning at the right moment so they go right by him.
Yeah, have missiles killed him in the past? I guess.
No, the thing is that, well, in later movies we're going to get to, they come up with, like, some kind of fun B-movie explanation as for why, like, conventional weapons don't work on Godzilla. But in the earlier movies, they're just, like, bouncing off him or something.
Right.
But in this one, they just don't hit him. It's just when they finally do hit him, he dies.
That's true.
I guess it's worth mentioning his fire-breathing abilities.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of interesting because they didn't cave to a lot of fan things in this movie, obviously. This is not a good Godzilla fan movie. But early test screenings didn't have any fire-breathing in them. And that got out and people were like, what? Godzilla's gotta breathe fire. Or really, it's atomic breath. But Godzilla's gotta breathe fire. So they went back and they're like added shots of like the weird like fishy breath, and they're like, I guess that could ignite and like light on fire, so they hastily added some fire breathing shots.
That makes a lot of sense.
Man. Yeah, no electromagnetic strikes like we usually see.
I did like that he brings kind of the storm with him, which I'm sensing is like a trope of the genre.
I I don't know. I thought maybe that was just because Roland Emmerich wanted everything to be at night with rain and lightning.
Yeah.
It's always better.
I think you're probably right, but I did kind of think, oh, that's kind of cool worked for like the mythos of Godzilla. Yeah. You know, he shows up and it's he kind of brings this huge thunderstorm and it creates this atmosphere. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, yes, that's totally what I meant to do.
Great idea, Roiland.
You see, he's the storm. The storm comes with him. I don't. That's what I meant. I told all of you that earlier. Don't you remember?
So at the very end, they sort of steal the ending to the 1976 King Kong, which is the weirdest. The weirdest grab, because I guess they ran out of Jurassic Park bits to steal. I guess it kind of works, because you do feel bad for Godzilla, but again, it just, it's bizarre, like you said, with, like, you feel like Matthew Broderick's about to cry, and then everybody is like, yeah, we won, hooray!
Yeah, it's, we don't feel bad for him because the movie pulls that off, right? We feel bad for him in, like, a, like, why is the movie treating him so poorly sort of way? Because it's, I don't, it's like, it's weird. It does, we can't, I can't figure out what the movie wants you to feel there.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think it knows. It's strange. I don't think it has a clue, based on how it's been going the whole film.
Yes, that's the kind of ambiguous feeling I was looking for from all of you guys. Is
the audience decides. The viewer decides what in their mind.
It's a Rorschach test. The whole movie's a Rorschach test. Whatever. I'm psychoanalyzing you right now. Me, Roland Emmerich.
I thought it was interesting that the original director attached to this was Jan de Bont, who directed Speed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we could have had a much campier somehow, but more I don't know. I mean, this one was pretty entertaining, even though it was so bad, so.
Yeah, so let's get to the judgments. So once again, it's time for our judgments of this Godzilla movie. But this time, before we get into our traditional scoring system, we have a very special kind of judgment. So Mac has a lot of scripts fly across her desk and is a kind of an expert in giving notes, you know, making the best of a bad script. So Mac, if you had this disaster land on your desk, what would your notes be?
I think my best pitch is, and this is very trendy, I would gender swap Godzilla. I know it's controversial, but I would just make Godzilla a lady Godzilla.
A pregnant female.
Yep.
Pregnant and female, and you could...
On TLC.
I think you could lean in more to the kind of, they kind of do this a little bit, but it's so weird of Godzilla being angry that they killed all of his babies. I think you could lean into the kind of mother looking to nest thing a little more. I actually think that is kind of interesting. And then there are thousands of other notes that I would give, but the romance, I would probably to say just get rid of it. because that's counter to what, you know, these kind of big tentpole movies, you typically want a love interest, right? Although now that's not so much of a, there's a little pushback against that now, but at this time, if I was giving the note, I might have made a little bit more in the Jurassic Park vein, where the love interest is kind of one of the other scientists. I think you could have repurposed that, because also the jokes with the scientist that's hot for
the redheaded lady
guy,
who's ready for
hot
it.
Hot for the worm.
Do not work at all. No. So maybe, and then she can have more of like a meaningful contribution to the actual, you know, plot.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. If the redheaded scientist had Audrey's part, maybe there would have been something there.
Yes.
There would have been more science talk. It would have been, more Godzilla for sure.
That's what we need, more jargon.
Yeah, we need more science. We need more some fake words thrown out.
And then the ending of the movie could be them in their science test, and he goes, and he pulls up a positive pregnancy test, and he goes, wait, I thought I threw away all of Godzilla's tests. And then she goes, oh, that's not Godzilla's. And then
and then it's just a push zoom freeze frame on Matthew Broderick's face.
Oh right, no, here
like,
we go
like
again.
Like the Home Alone place.
Yes. Oh man. And I also love that they had the confidence in this movie to think that they could set it up for a sequel by leaving one egg.
Yeah.
One egg untouched with one last little guy.
In a way, they did make a sequel. They made a cartoon series that was fairly well-liked, where basically the last Godzilla, they retconned it so it hatched in front of Nick, and Nick, it imprinted on Nick, so it was a good little baby.
In a cartoon?
Yeah.
It imprinted on him! Wow. So he has like a little...
Yeah.
Love that. But yeah, I did feel like there were a lot of extraneous characters in this, and you had to keep kind of popping around to different places, and I would have just streamlined it by keeping all of your main people of interest kind of in one place, and then, you know, there's a whole other thing that we talked about with, you know, who is to blame for this catastrophe, and I think that thematically it could have touched on that a little bit more, but...
Right.
Yes.
You mean the French should have been blamed more?
Yes.
The French were more wrong?
Insult the French more.
Right.
Good note.
Exactly.
So now we'll get into our traditional scoring system. For Mac and for anyone who has never listened to the show, as Godzilla evangelists, we have a holy duty to assign these movies to their proper place in the Godzilla afterlife. So we must now decide if it belongs in Godzilla Heaven, Purgatory, or Hell. Let's see. Who went first last time? I think I made Joanna go first last time. So, Sam, kick it off.
All right. Well, I'm kicking this one off. So, I listened back to a previous episode, which I don't usually do, and I said at one point something that surprised myself that I said, which is that I said I felt bad putting one of the anime Godzillas in Hell because I feel like Hell sounds more remarkable, and I feel bad like putting an unremarkable movie in Hell. So, with that said, this movie goes in the most righteous, remarkable Hell you could put. Like, it is capital H-E double hockey sticks Hell, at the forefront. It is Satan himself of Hell, and it is horrible. And also, I enjoyed every moment of it.
Right.
I was not bored. I enjoyed everything about it. I absolutely recommend it. Is the headlining act of Godzilla Hell.
You know what? I'll jump in because my take was very largely the same. I mean, fan complaints aside, which are totally understandable, this isn't the worst movie with the Godzilla name on it somehow. But it is potentially...
Somehow says the man who's the biggest fan in Star Wars.
What is the worst?
We'll have to decide that once we see them all.
On
That'll
the
be
spot.
A good capper. But it is the least Godzilla-like movie. It is just phenomenally wrong-headed in every way. But it's really entertaining like 75% of the time. So I gotta agree with Sam, Godzilla Hell, but like a pleasant hell. It's like that Far Side cartoon where the guy is saying "hot enough for you" to somebody else in hell. Like that guy is Godzilla 98
yes.
in hell.
Specifically Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that you can't put a movie like this in Purgatory. You just could not. It would not fit there. And Hell, for me, is reserved for films like Rodan and films that I just want to rip my stomach out while watching because I'm bored and confused or whatever. This one, I also thoroughly enjoyed all of its awfulness. And if I was told I had to watch it again, I would say, okay, you know, like I wouldn't protest a ton. So, mm-hmm. I'm putting it on the lower rung of heaven. It can't be that top. It can't be the original Godzilla film. It can't be King Kong, you know, my love. But Matthew Broderick deserves a place up there. And I'm going to give it to him.
It's like a separate platform for trash cinema.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like trash heaven.
this is hard to classify in our usual way.
Yeah.
But Mac, you wanna take us home with your rating?
Yeah, I'm gonna side with Joanna on this one because I have movies that just make me like deeply sad and angry to watch that I won't name on this podcast. But yeah, I think it's just there's something wonderful about how off base this is, and it was entertaining to watch. I laughed a lot. I had a lot of comments.
Yes,
it inspired a lot of comedy during and on this podcast. So I'm gonna put it on side heaven.
Yeah. The B door for sure.
Yes,
not the headliner, but it's like the third. It's not the main stage. It's like the
heaven
third
minus.
Stage at the
yeah,
show.
If this is Coachella. This is like somewhere. Actually, Coachella is hell. What am I talking about?
Yeah, but it's like a 3 p.m. performance. Maybe 5. You know. Okay, well, I always love to bring him up because I do. I'm waiting for the moment when he's in one of these films. But, like, guys, if this was made today, who would you want to play Matthew Broderick? Argos or Paul Rudd? I don't know.
Paul Rudd would be fun.
And as long as we're doing hypotheticals, this movie had a lot of cool and fun and relevant New York jokes. So if you guys were going to make a radical 90s Godzilla movie in Los Angeles, how would you do it? What would the twist be?
My answer is just you finish watching the movie and it's just Escape from LA by John Carpenter.
I'm going to say Godzilla attacks LA and it's this big, it's just chaos and, you know, and everyone is really, really freaked out by it. And then he steps over the hill and gets into the valley and then nobody cares anymore. They just lose all interest in him.
No one hears of him for 20 years.
Yep.
I think mine would be that instead of Audrey being in the news, she would be in the improv scene. And that would be her goal, is to overcome the grossness in the improv community and become a fabulous improv star.
To make it as a headliner at UCB.
Yeah. And to get the military to bomb... let's see, what would it be? The Hollywood Bowl.
Yes.
That's where Godzilla
they should
nest.
Do that anyway. And I think it's more likely that Audrey is an influencer and not
oh,
a
that's,
yeah. Improv
yep,
is
no.
still good for her.
Yeah, you're totally right.
She's 1,000% an influencer. She's like doing hair vitamins or something. Mm-hmm. And
oh,
the
yeah.
hair
she
vitamins.
She keeps asking about her hair throughout the show.
She feeds them to her pet lizard who's on her feed
shoulder.
Or whatever,
yeah.
And that becomes Godzilla.
Yes.
Because there's some radioactive element, and it can be a comment on Big Pharma. This is, it's just writing itself.
You
there
should
are
honestly.
Thousands of photos of Godzilla, but all of them are in front of either wings on a wall or a pink wall. These are the only photos of Godzilla that exist.
I want, instead of the mayor of New York, I want it to be the governor of California, and I do want it to be Arnold. Like,
Arnold.
He's the only person for the role. Not Los Angeles, you know, like, we still have the German effect, kind of.
If we're just on that subject, it makes a whole lot more sense for Godzilla to strike L.A. than New York.
Totally. The proximity
come to think
to
of it. Yeah, what was that? How did he get all the way over there?
He picked Yonkers. They were like, he's going straight to Yonkers. I loved that moment.
I was very confused at first, and then... Later in the movie, when Audrey steals his tape, well, there's like a shot of the footprints that says Panama under it. So it's like, oh, he came through the Panama Canal.
Because he's coming from French Polynesia.
Yeah.
So, because
wow.
he had, if fourth grade is to be believed, he had three options. He had wagon
he could
train,
go around the Cape Horn,
or Panama Canal.
As promised, we're going to keep reading our fan messages that we get. Here's one from Matthew C., who is not our good friend Matthew Charles.
Not Matthew B.
Well, Matthew technically, I like to keep people's privacy. If you want me to read your full name, you have to explicitly say it in your message.
Well, the question is it Broderick, but he's trying to obscure his identity?
Yeah.
Let's one up from B.
No, because he hasn't listened to this podcast yet.
He has, and he's pumped for this episode. He's trying to get a good name in before we... Too late, Matthew. We already taped it.
Now he'll hear us.
Yeah.
He's going to be our next guest. Do it, Matt. Anyway, Matthew C. says, accidentally came across this podcast, and I am delighted. I am totally you, the complete outsider with a Godzilla obsession. Thanks for spreading the good word.
Ah, wait, does he mean you, Ryan?
I'm guessing that what he that's what he means, but at least unlike last time, he didn't actively insult you.
Hey, I'm always there. I like when people are at least, you know, getting riled up. They're really leaning in to the podcast.
Yeah.
Speaking of, if you're enjoying the podcast, it would be a huge help for you to review us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice and on YouTube, and to share our social media. I've said this before, but I'm going to keep saying it because it's true. We're really trying to get this show to a wider audience, and it's not going to happen without your help, so we're counting on you guys. And we really appreciate that you're always listening.
And Ryan, I just want to say thanks for letting us cover this film. You know, we fought for it for a long time, and I'm re-energized by the fact that I saw it, and we covered it.
I'm glad, because either next episode or after the new movie, I'm a little unsure at how our releases are going to stagger out, but
we're going back to the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, back to the swinging 60s.
Oh shit. I missed 20 years. Great.
Yeah. You skipped 20 years ahead. We're going to do a double header of Godzilla versus Monster Zero and Godzilla versus the Sea Monster.
They're both sea monsters. Okay, cool.
That's true. Godzilla is a sea monster. It's a little hypocritical, but they're both really fun 60s entries. I think we're gonna have a good time, and but I hope you enjoyed this one. I think we all did, and we'll see you next time. Bye everybody.
Thank you for joining
us.
Bye. Godzilla Evangelists, a Geek Stew Network podcast, is brought to you by me, Ryan Sargent, and my friends, Joanna Brodecki and Sam Schlenker. All our incredible music is composed by Robert Mai, and our wonderful artwork is drawn by Cassidy Stone. Special thanks to our families, friends, and the wonderful artists who made the movies we talked about today. Godzilla Evangelists is a satirical, critical work not affiliated or endorsed by Toho, Legendary Pictures, or anyone behind the Godzilla series. Visit our website at godzillaevangelists.com. We're also on Twitter at GodzillaCast and Instagram at GodzillaEvangelists. If you prefer to listen to us online, we have a YouTube channel. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us next episode. In the meantime, keep spreading the word of Godzilla.